How many of you in here would consider yourself primarily educators?
Good.
They'll be, because I'm switching direction entirely and going to talk about competencies. And even though as educators, I don't think you'll probably find this compelling either, you have to do it. So, you know, there's at least some have to interest in here. For the rest of you, it'll be a little bit like watching paint dry, and I'll try to help you kind of follow through on why I think it's really important, particularly in public health nursing education, that we are looking at levels of knowledge and skills that we want nurses to have across levels of practice. I have no financial disclosures to make about this presentation, and I've relisted the objectives, which really is kind of my take-homes for you from today, just to know something about this notion of policy competency, at least the way I'm going to use it, and to be able to come up with at least one example out of the hundreds that I'm going to give you of how we might look at educational content and application to help nurses develop policy competency. So let me start by telling you kind of what got me into this. As those of you who are educators know, and it has probably been true for nursing education forever, we are forever going through what essentials we want our students to have, what competencies we want our students to have, what skills, and we are revising these on an ongoing basis. And the downside to this for public health nursing has been that a lot of the things that we think are the heart and soul of our practice have gotten adopted by the rest of nursing, which you could say, well, that's a good thing because they've said that these are important things, but they've got adopted in that real mom and apple pie way, which is they're used as broad general concepts and everybody does it. It's like all nurses are leaders now, no matter what level of nurse you're educating, you know, it's all the children are above average, right? They're all leaders, they're all good in policy, they all know about populations, they all know epidemiology. So if you've watched kind of the essentials and the language creep, a lot of the stuff that we hold dear and say is important in practice is just done by everybody. And so it's become clear, I'm at a major medical center attached to a little university, and most everything in our College of Nursing is acute care focused. And then there's this fairly robust little public health nursing program with six faculty, which is a lot of faculty, trying constantly to explain ourselves and define and defend and why courses have to be the way they are and why we have to do the things we do. And so it's caused us to become very caught up as a faculty in competencies and in being able to level what we want students to know from the generalist level to a specialist level to a DNP level. So that's kind of what brought me into this. I'm using the term policy competence here, and this is a term from a guy by the name of Buford Longest who's done a lot of work on policy for administrators, and he says that policy competence means two things. It means you ought to be able to analyze policies that impact your area of concern, and then you ought to be able to figure out where to exert influence in that area. And so that's kind of where we're trying to go with public health nurses. I have a bunch of assumptions that I'm making here, and again, for you educators, you'll appreciate the assumptions. Because our educational essentials are a moving target, you have to take a snapshot and stop somewhere, right? So for the purposes of what I'm doing here, I'm talking about BSNs as being a generalist entry level, educational level for generalist public health nurses, the master's in public health nursing or an MPH being specialist, and the DNP being kind of the leadership focus that we're having. You know that there's been lots of changes in DNP essentials, and the master's essentials are just now being finalized, we think, within the next couple of months. So I'm kind of going with what the current state is, including that current revised draft of the master's essentials. And then I wanted to mention that a couple of years ago, some colleagues at Rush and I did some interviews with public health nursing leaders, and we defined that very broadly across not only traditional public health agencies, but also looking at home care leaders, hospice, occupational health, school nursing. I may be missing someone in there, and I apologize. And we asked them, we were asking them specifically about the DNP, but we said, what educational levels are you looking for in nurses to practice in different places in your agency? And they said, as a whole, one of the things we could generalize across the six or eight interviews we did was they said, we're less concerned with that educational level, other than that they all wanted more BSNs, we're more concerned with the skill set they bring. And so I really want to talk today about the policy skill set and what it is we would like nurses to have, because we really think that policy is an important part of public health nursing. When you're looking at populations, you're looking at population interventions, but you're also looking at shaping policy so that those interventions can take place. So much more than in other specialties, we think that this is important. What we're doing at Rush is doing this for a variety of concepts, but I'm just going to talk about policy today. So my methods to this were really to look at some of the relevant documents in nursing right now and kind of do a comparison across them. So the scope and standards, the BSN essentials, the MSN essentials, and then specifically the CNL white paper, which is just a role of master's prepared nurse, but has some additional things in there, the DNP essentials, and then we also looked at the COL competencies for public health professionals, which the newest version are in three tiers, which matches nicely with my three tiers of generalist, specialist, and leadership orientation. You know, the Quad Council is working on the nursing version of these, and I'm actually on that task force, so I can tell you it's still working, but we don't have the current draft of those yet, so I'm just using the COL. And I'll tell you up front, and then I'll show you some very long tables that I'll try to explain to you, that the conclusions overall was really very difficult to look at the way, because we're using words so loosely, I think, in nursing, it was really very difficult to try to figure out exactly what our seminal nursing documents were saying about policy for nurses across practice. Again, it was the all the children are above average kind of thing. Everybody is doing all these great things. And I teach across levels, and you know, it's not happening, and it's not possible. People have to grow and develop in their profession. But I can tell you in general, when you look at kind of the overarching themes for policy, at the BSN or generalist level of practice, we're talking about a nurse who understands something about the healthcare system. So we're talking about verbs that are understands and describes, understands something about the system, understands something about how a bill becomes a law. Remember, we all learned that in high school, but we all forgot it rapidly, and so goes back and refreshes, you know, how you actually implement or how you actually change policy, what the mechanisms are for creating policy, how policies impact individuals and families that they're working with, so that individual family impact, and then is able to advocate for individuals and families. So that's kind of the general gist of what a generalist nurse should know. At the specialist level, specific to public health, we're then getting more into analysis. Can they take a policy and pull it apart and say what the problem is, what are possible solutions, and how do they compare and contrast to each other, what are the politics, and can they pull that all together? And what I have my students do is a targeted policy memo where they, one of my former students is here, she did this, where they take that analysis they did and they target it to an audience and say, based on this, this is what we need to do next for this. And then at the leadership or the DNP level, you're talking about the same type of policy analysis, but really across systems, across stakeholders, really kind of a leveling up of those same set of skills. So that's kind of what the nursing documents and the public health documents would tell you are supposed to be our policy goals. But when I looked at it and I realized this is tiny print and I can kind of give you the overview on it, the column that you're seeing on your left is the nursing document. The column in the middle is where there was a COL-related competency at that level that was related to the nursing essential. And the column on the right are my recommendations for educational content in this area or assignments. And the next step of this work for me and for us back home at Rush would be to have measurable pieces to that. So we have this content, this level of assignments. Here's how we would know someone was competent at that before they were allowed to pass the course, graduate, et cetera. So let me kind of run through these a little bit quickly just to give you a general idea of the kinds of things we're talking about students knowing. The first BSN essential is basically this understanding the basic healthcare system. And so the content for that might be the example I gave you of how a bill becomes a law. The second essential and the third are really to know something, and again, description, general knowledge, something about how the healthcare system is organized and financed. And so for your BSN level, your generalist student, it is to teach them something about the structure of the healthcare system and finance at a really basic level. How are we paying for what we do? What are the organizations that compose the healthcare system? The fourth essential is looking at the legislative and regulatory process, and there is a COL competency that tracks with this. And the content and assignments that I'm using or recommending is to begin to talk about advocacy with regulations and policies as you see them hit your families and your clients. How might you advocate for them? And then to have the students do something that's called a policy environmental analysis. And what that is, and I use it across, I think it's relevant across all levels, is it's to have every nurse, wherever they're practicing, know who in that organization is tracking policy for the organization and how does that get disseminated. And that can be true at the basic generalist level of, you know, who's really keeping an eye on the home healthcare regulations that you're going to make me enforce here, and how is that working out, and how does that information get out to me? And it can also be true, and I'll mention it again, at the leadership level. The fifth essential is describing the regs, and this is specifically in the nursing documents talking about how they relate to nursing practice. And so I didn't worry about this in content for public health nurses and for policy because we do a lot of that in nursing, in professional nursing courses at the baccalaureate level. The sixth essential is looking at sociocultural, economic, legal, and political factors that influence healthcare delivery and practice. And this is where I think we can teach students where we have them look at healthcare outcomes and based on those outcomes begin to identify vulnerable populations and populations of particular note and target for policy and programming. And it's also where I think we should be teaching students to begin to identify policy issues that are of interest to nursing. We do this in nursing sometimes related to nursing practice. Identify issues that are relevant to your practice and, you know, practice acts and all of that. I think for public health nursing, this is our opportunity to really push the students to look at issues, policy issues that are relevant to their patient-client populations. It's not just all about them and whether they can practice. That's important, but this is our opportunity to really have them start to look at policy issues in their families or communities that they're working in. The seventh one is regulation. Looking at the roles of regulatory agencies, and again, there's a COL competency that tracks with that. And this is helping students in the clinical setting understand the regulations that undergird the programs that they might be working in. Again, home care or working with a WIC program, or what are the regulations that monitor those? Basically looking at some of that and some quality. The eighth one is looking at the implications of policy on issues of access and equity and affordability. And again, there's COL competencies related to this. And this is where I think we can start teaching the students to look at the issues of access. Who has access? Types of access? How does it impact health not to have access to care? And you can use case studies, and there's a wealth of case studies out there, as examples of the impact of public policy on healthcare outcomes for the individuals and families that they're seeing. The ninth essential is about using ethical frameworks to look at policy specifically for vulnerable populations. Again, the unique contribution here in public health nursing education is to look at ethics and ethical principles as they apply to aggregates. The students get a lot of nursing ethics about autonomy and beneficence, and those are certainly important in the one-on-one nurse-client relationship. This is our chance to challenge them a little to think about outcomes for larger populations, to think about utilitarianism and greatest good, those kinds of issues. It's not a contrasting, it's not a one is better than another, it's just to really challenge them to think in a different way. The 10th, 11th, and 12th are all about advocacy. Can you advocate with decision makers? Can they participate in political processes? And can they advocate for consumers? And so I think the content and assignments, and there was less here in the COL competencies than we have in nursing. I think the content and assignments are helping them to look at nursing professional organizations and where that helps you advocate, to look at case management and both doing case management and then what are the policy implications for those families and how you might advocate at a larger level, and to, again, help them identify policy issues that are of interest to nursing. So across the board, this is, again, general, descriptive, having students understand the policy context for their practice. When you take it to the master's essential level, then it does get to be a little bit more analytical. And the first essential here is analyze how policies influence the structure and financing of healthcare practice and health outcomes. There's a COL competency related to that. And this is where I strongly recommend that we teach students at this level to do these policy analyses. And there's a variety of models. I use a really simple one that from John Kingdon that has three parts to it that I mentioned earlier. Can you define a policy problem with data to support that it's a problem? Can you compare and contrast solutions to the problem? And then can you look at the politics? Who might feel differently about it? Who has power? Who has influence? Can you take those three pieces and decide where best, if any place, is the need for activism? And I have students take that analysis and put it in a targeted, short, to-the-point memo that they address to, could be a legislator, could be a professional organization, could be a local governing board, you know, where they think the target is that has the most influence at this point on this issue. The biggest challenge for students doing this is the whole idea of looking at other perspectives. They all come in very passionate about a policy issue that everyone should see the way they see, and how could you not understand this? And to really challenge them to say, why might physicians see it differently? Why might businesses see it differently? You know, who else is here? Not only how much power and influence those groups have, but why might they have the perspective they have? Really helps them to be able to be much more powerful advocates, because it helps them understand the issue more fully, and it really helps them. There's a football metaphor that I'm going to screw up, but it's like the best defense is a good offense. If you know what your opponents are going to say, then you can be prepared for it when you go in. The second essential is participate in the development of policy at a variety of levels. And again, there's COL competencies related to this. And this is where you challenge students to begin to identify population level policy issues, to look at advocacy at larger levels, like serving on governing boards. There are policy implementation exercises, because implementation is really critical to getting the intent out of your policy. Mary Mundinger's dissertation 25 years ago was about how implementation of home care regs can be hugely different from what the regs were actually intended to do. So have students work with implementation, and have them work with evaluation. How would you know if this policy was effective? How would you know if it worked? The third essential is, again, looking at regulation, and I go back to the policy environmental analysis. Even at higher levels of, or broader levels of practice, students need to be looking at who's monitoring policy, what's my role in that, how is that getting disseminated. The fourth essential is about interpreting research, and I didn't look at content specifically to this. I think we do a good job with students of some basic research utilization. The challenge in policy is just to really push the students to have data and not just build their policy analysis around anecdotes, but to use data behind it. The fifth MSN essential is advocacy again, and this is where we start to get students to take that analysis I talked about, write the memo, begin to develop testimony, maybe just locally, begin to, both written and oral, begin to start to disseminate what they've learned about policy issues that they've examined. And then I want to go through this quickly, I only have a little bit of time. At the leadership level, it's very similar analysis skills, but again, it's looking at multiple stakeholders and possibly looking across systems. So at my agency and at a similar agency, and what we might have in common and what we might do differently. So the first DNP essential is to critically analyze health policy proposals. And there is a COL competency, and then I look at policy analysis for multiple stakeholders, and again, the targeted memo based on their analysis. The second essential is demonstrating leadership in developing policy. And here's where you can challenge them to take that analysis and begin to write and craft their own solutions, and then figure out how you would take those solutions through the system to actually be made, you know, legislated or regulated into policy. And you can use case studies of people who've done this in the past, you know, historical policy development as well as current policy development. And you can see there's a lot of COL competencies related to that one. The third essential is influencing policymakers, and actually the fourth is educating others, and this is where we get into more dissemination. So more sophistication with writing memos and writing testimony, and broadening your audience. How can you share the results of your policy analysis with your community constituency, with the people at your level in your agency, and with people at state and federal levels, potentially? So a variety of audiences. And the fifth is advocacy. We talked about that, and advocacy for social justice. So it's much of the content I talked about, and I want to get to kind of the conclusions that I am drawing from this work, which are that I think it is really important, particularly in public health and not just for policy, that we are refining and getting very specific about levels of knowledge and skills that we want nurses to have, both coming out of school and in the practice arena later on. Again, because we really want to, you know, I come from a major medical institution where the belief is if it's worth doing, it's worth having a physician do it. We don't want to do that for nurses. We want to say that it's important that we have these skills that we need to do. It's not just that because we're nurses we can do this, but that we have the skills to do them at the appropriate level. Second, I really want to push our students and ourselves in practice to base as much of our policy analysis and our policy work on data as possible. The history of public health in this country is a lot of policies created with an underwhelming amount of data, and then we wonder why they didn't get us the results we wanted to. We didn't have a good definition of the problem to begin with. We didn't make sure that the policy matched the problem, so no wonder that you're not you know, addressing it the way you want to. My fourth take-home is building across each level of education. Those of you who are teachers have probably had your students say, we did this last quarter, last year, in my undergraduate program, you know, blah, blah, blah. We really need to be careful about building to use their time and their talents wisely, and then also to be able to assume if they've gotten this level of education, they should know this, and then we can move on from it. And then the last challenge I would have for all of us, both in practice and education, is to think about these types of things, and I'll just be specific to policy here, in terms of how we can also educate nurses outside the formal education system. People may be done with their degree work. Not everything has to be done. I hope my dean isn't anywhere, but not everything has to be done in a formal educational setting. We can use, and we certainly do use, on-the-job training and mentoring to develop some of these skills. We can also use continuing education to help nurses be able to develop some of this, use it more effectively in their job without necessarily having to go all the way back and start another degree process. Thank you.
Do we have questions?
Okay, so the question is, what's the role basically of accreditation in relationship to looking, examining some of these outcomes of service delivery, et cetera, of local health departments? Well, in the study I just presented really doesn't, you know, we really didn't look at that at all. Now, for folks that aren't familiar, the whole system of accreditation of local health departments, you know, very, very roughly, it's very roughly something like the Joint Commission of Hospitals, et cetera. But that is coming, and our esteemed Kay Bender is head of the Public Health Accreditation Board nationally. That's definitely coming. Health departments are going to be accredited. It's really kind of a focus on quality and quality of delivery of practice and services by health departments. In this FAST study, Public Health Activities and Services Tracking Study, we hope to find measures around public health standards that are occurring and being utilized in health departments in our study. We're still kind of looking at what variables we can include and what data are out there that we'll be able to include. But we hope to include that as one of these quality measures, kind of a more nuanced measure of service delivery. We hope to be able to include that. It's still sort of the jury's out on what that's going to look like or where it's going to come from. So I don't know if that, because we can start to see a little bit about, you know, how health departments are structured and a little and relate that to performance. We can relate that structure a little bit to outcomes. There's some of the literature out there. We know very little about how performance relates to outcomes in that sort of as a mediator in terms of service delivery. There's still a lot to be figured out there.
Go ahead, Phil.
Patty, while you're up there. One of the problems we're seeing in Connecticut is that the health departments that are most strapped for money for the communities are beginning to outsource programs like that. So in your tracking, are you looking at health departments outsourcing those specific public health related services?
Yeah, I mean, this study I did has really given me pause about what were the climate of this change in service over time, and then the super accelerated change that's occurring right now. So this new study, I hope to get at that, use that kind of natural experiment that's going on to sort of more quickly get at these outcomes. And some of these are things like this outsourcing you're talking about. Will we be able to get that? I hope we can get that. We're using these practice-based research networks so that we really can work with health departments, state and local health departments that are really into this kind of stuff and are sort of your early adopters and wanting to provide and look at data together, et cetera, and get at some of these more nuanced things around where is the WIC services being delivered. Those data are hard to come by. And I'm really interested in, I mentioned in my study that, well, what are the mechanisms that are occurring, and do health departments have to provide those services? What about when health departments work very collaboratively in communities and assure that those services are thoroughly and properly and adequately delivered by other providers? And so in those cases, WIC being provided elsewhere might work very well, in fact, maybe even better. So, but we have to find variables that help us measure that. And there's some folks that have done some work in that area, and hopefully we'll find some good data.
I support your approaches in developing nursing leadership, all of your different approaches in doing that. But how do you translate that into something that is meaningful and supportive in a local public health department in Rainbow, Colorado? We have public health nurses who don't have their baccalaureate degree, let alone their master's degree or nursing doctorate degree. So again, how can you make that meaningful for us in the small rural health departments?
And actually, you're an educator. You could have done that. You know, I think that is the $4 million question or whatever. I know that the IOM report, the Robert Wood Johnson IOM report that came out, has some very specific strategies around things like increasing levels of education overall, and are asking states to be working on very specific strategies. And it would be at some of the places where that's the most difficult to do, which isn't your urban inner city major medical center where there's a million programs around. So I think those kinds of things we need. I mean, from the education side, it's the same stuff we've needed for 25 years. Better articulation, funding for students. But there's also kind of this cultural environmental shift that I think the IOM Robert Wood Johnson report is trying to get to, which is just to really kind of push up the level of expectation that this is going to happen. This is, you know, think about this when you get in the field. It's going to happen. Maybe not this year if you don't think you're ready, but ultimately you're going to have to keep challenging yourself and your educational levels. That doesn't make it easy or painless. The other thing that I alluded to at the end that I really do think we need to do is to keep working on figuring out ways to do shorter-term CE that leads to something. And there's a variety of things, and again, I don't want to short-sell a degree, but there's a variety of things we could do that are kind of standalone pieces that might be related to college credit. You know, policy kinds of things might be one of them for public health nurses in a county, assessment kinds of things that maybe aren't at the level of master's level, but start to challenge, you know, nurses to look at these issues a little bit differently and make them feel like they're learners. Because that's the other thing, at least we get in Illinois, is the nurses feel like they're not capable of whatever the next step is, and they don't have time, so why would they do this?
And that's what I was going to add. You might also think in terms of time to allow this, because I know it's certainly on my agenda, and that's something I would like to address, but I'm just trying to survive out there.
Yeah.
One.
One of my DNP students in Illinois just did a great online transition program in the middle of the state for an LPN to ADN program. And again, so we're talking way downstream here of where we want them to be, but an LPN to ADN program. And because there was a nursing shortage in that part of the state, she was able to get funding for these LPNs. They had to stay working, which is a challenge, but for books, for computers, for tuition, it was basically free if they could bust their little butts for a year and get through it. And she's got, you know, she's beating them off with sticks, and they're feeling capable and competent because they looked at a variety of things like, you know, can these people afford it, and then kind of how do we tailor it to the learner who maybe isn't as sophisticated and things like that. You know, we just have to, we have a long way to go on all of this.
And
I was going to piggyback on what Phil and Freddie were talking about. I don't know whether looking at a care work system similar to what Dana was talking about in terms of tracking, as you have other agencies doing kinds of work, would that give the option of being able to look at outcomes that could be measured over time and whether they really were achieving what you were trying to accomplish? Any comments?
Do you want
to?
No. Sure. So, and the question is, can something like the CareWare?
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, if you had that kind of a system where if you were contracting services out, would that be of help to be able to track what's really happening? How are the providers, you know, what are the referrals that are being made? What are the services that are being provided?
Yeah.
There are
different data sets out there. You know, community health centers have data sets around service delivery, and there's other kinds of systems out there. The state health departments, for example, with WIC, they have how many clients are served, and they have it, but per county, vouchers given, et cetera, et cetera. And they have those, at least in our state and other states. I'm trying to uncover all, sniff out this stuff. Per agency, so we do know, you know, who's delivering some of these per agency. So as we get further down, I'd like to think we can start to look at some of these other more specific items. But we're just like in the beginning stages, and we're at such a rudimentary place in terms of who collects what, because it's all different. Just starting to pull this stuff together is going to be very difficult. But everybody's really poised to want to do things more and more, collect more and more, and do it similarly, and move forward. So that's the beauty where we're at right now.
Okay, we are actually out of time, but if your question is short.
Okay, it's pretty short. As a nurse and an anthropologist, I've been working on health disparities, specifically black-white health disparities, for probably 15 to 20 years. And, you know, I've been coming at it from an ethnographic life history point of view, and I'm just wondering, is there still a place for that type of qualitative look at things? That, I mean, I think stories really make the issues you're talking about come alive, and I'm just wondering where those stories are in nursing, and where that kind of deep description is of a community that really, you know, is readable for many, many people. I'm just wondering
if folks are, Mary's question is sort of, is there a qualitative piece or component or sort of more anthropological analysis that could be done here? And I don't know if this really gets to your question, but as the final piece of this study I just presented, I conducted a series of interviews among sort of national experts who are folks who have lived as public health, local health department leaders representing these areas, particularly in the South and urban health departments that were in my sample, and have kind of a national perspective. And I interviewed them and said, look, these are my findings. What do you make of this? What do you think is going on? Why this group of 15 to 44-year-olds? Why do these services stand out? And it really kind of gave some pictures to these data, and haven't written that up yet. Does that sort of get to that?
And I would say also that because of the fact that our national policymakers still have such an affinity for qualitative data, that is the perfect complement to the quantitative data that people have described. I want to thank all of you for your time. It's been a wonderful session. You've heard a number of challenges today to public health nursing, and we hope that you've gotten a little bit of perspective on the different leadership capabilities in public health nursing.